This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
In this hour, we travel back in time to the beginnings of local television in Charlottesville, and it's a great honor to welcome live into the studio Steve Ashby, who is a cameraman, and I would imagine just did a little bit of everything with Jefferson Cable Corporation back in the day. Steve, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Coy. It's a pleasure to be here.
You were telling me before we went on the air that this is the first time you've done radio since 1971?
Yeah, that's right.
Where exactly?
WTJU. I used to do a satirical radio program that we pre-recorded, and I was dropping the tapes off to Cousin Lou, who had a country show over there one morning, and he was legally blind, and he just went over to the teletype and ripped off some news copy, and he handed it to me, flipped the mic on, and said, "And now the news with Steve Ashby." It was a pretty fumbly news report.
Sink or swim.
That's right.
So, Steve, we want to talk about television in Charlottesville, and we want to invite folks at any time to join this conversation, 977-1070, when we start talking about a lot of the local shows that used to be on. But before we do that, give us a 101, you know, where are you from and how did you find yourself behind a camera at Charlottesville's first cable company?
Oh, okay. Well, I'm from Charlottesville. I was born in Charlottesville, and in 1959, we moved out to Albemarle County, and of course, I went to Albemarle High School. And at some point, when Bob Monroe started programming about a year and a half before the federal requirement to do so, they had a program called Speak Out. It was hosted by a guy from Brooklyn named Dave Bellin, who worked for the Boy Scouts of America. And he was gay, by the way. A rather ironic thing there. And I was asked to appear on the show as a senior at Albemarle High School. And that's how I got introduced to the cable.
So tell us now, and we'll have some audio in just a minute here, of Bob Monroe himself, the guy who brought cable television to Charlottesville. But when are we talking about, and of course, this predates NBC 29.
Yeah, by 3 years.
So somebody asked me today, you could still get television. Your rabbit ears could pick up network television out of Richmond or D.C., right?
Right. If you were lucky, you could get, Channel 12, Channel 8, Channel 6, and Channel 3. Most of them were Richmond. Channel 3 came out of Harrisonburg, and they all looked pretty awful depending on which side of the mountains you were on. Charlottesville was ripe for a CATV system. CA stood for Community Antenna. Bob had some radio stations, I believe, in Charlotte, North Carolina. And he was trying to buy a TV station, and the deal fell through, I believe. And he heard from his real estate agent that there were some CATV systems for sale. And he wasn't able to buy one, but he decided he wanted to start one. So he looked around, and Charlottesville naturally was an area that he thought was perfect. So that might be a good time to hear the first.
Well, first tell us, what is a cable antenna station?
Well, community antenna. The idea was to put an antenna on the highest hill in a community and to pick up TV stations that were remote. And the signal would be much clearer. Run them over a cable, and each subscriber would be able to get much better television reception. In this case, 12 stations, and so that was the idea, and it proved to be very profitable.
And where was the antenna?
It was on Carter's Mountain. Bob actually got to be friends with the fellow that owned Carter's Mountain, and they agreed to a lease. And I believe it was the first antenna up there. There are tons of antennas up there now.
So this was the first one?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, the first of many.
Right. Yeah, I think all of our TV stations today have them up there.
Yeah. So the idea was to throw an antenna up there and then run a cable to homes, and it was the best rabbit ears you could buy.
Right.
And you could get 12 channels.
Yeah.
And two of those were 10 and 11, right?
Right, yes. Two of them were cable channels. And when they first started, they had a TV camera in the window of the cable on East Main Street, and you could walk by and see yourself on television. And that was the extent of local programming then. And they had
that was the first local show.
Yeah, really. Yeah, it was yourself. And they had a news and weather thing, and the news was index cards stuck in this little turnstile that went around with a motor and would stop for 2 or 3 seconds. You could read it, and then it would go to the next one.
And there was just camera pointed on the index.
Yeah,
cards.
And there was another camera on some weather instruments, which were all up on the roof of the cable building. Including a wind meter, a velocimeter, and so you could see how fast the wind was blowing and what the temperature was at Midway on West Main Street next to the bus station.
And that's where this office was?
Yeah, 324 West Main. It was right next to there was a restaurant called La Snail that was in the old house that was between the bus station
and
the cable.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was next door to the McGregor Motors parking lot, so... And the train tracks ran right behind it. The building had been an automobile transmission building, and it reeked of solvent. And you'd be doing a show. It wasn't soundproof. They'd done the best they could, but you'd hear the trains go by during the shows occasionally. It was, it was pretty annoying. And you couldn't stop doing a show. They did them live and taped them, and they had no real good editing equipment, so it was just pointless. If you stopped, you had to start over again.
So it was live to tape.
Yeah, and then they'd rebroadcast the show they did live a couple of more times.
There you go. We're talking with Steve Ashby about Jefferson Cable Corporation, which when did Bob Monroe actually launch it? When did it start?
He came here in 1962, and the first subscribers were hooked up by sometime in the early 1963, I believe he said. So.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was inconsistent. He got in some trouble, as you'll hear from the audio.
Let's do that. Now set this up for us. This is Bob Monroe, the man who brought local television to Charlottesville.
It was 7 or 8 months before Bob died, and it was he founded the Monroe Institute, which is human consciousness studies. And he granted me an interview in July of 1994, which, like I said, was about 7 or 8 months before he died. And he died on St. Patrick's Day in the next year.
Well, let's hear this. Bob Monroe, the founder of Jefferson Cable Corporation. Here it is.
This is WJCC-TV, Channel 11 in Charlottesville, Virginia, a service of the Jefferson Cable Corporation.
I went over into Charlottesville and discovered that the average station or radio, average receiver in Charlottesville only got 2.5 stations. And I think we got initially open in mid-1963 in Charlottesville. But the problem that came up was that Waynesboro, hearing that Charlottesville was going to have CATV system, must have one themselves. Well, it was absurdly easy because if you don't know the history between Waynesboro and Charlottesville, Waynesboro nevertheless likes to let Charlottesville get ahead of it. So that was easy to obtain a franchise over there. The only problem was that in our funding we had no way to build two cable systems, and they are initial capital intensive. To finish after. I had to sell my stations, incidentally, in North Carolina in order to get enough money to do it. It's very expensive. Anyway, so we finally opened up Charlottesville, but because we had started to build Waynesboro, we didn't have enough money to finish Charlottesville. And here we are bragging about providing people with 12 channels of TV, and the people on the other side of the street, because we were serving through alleys, for example, right across the street, didn't. They were still getting their 2.5 channels. So there was this big to-do about, and the same thing was happening in Waynesboro, because we didn't have enough money, capital, to finish both of them, and we should have let one, but we couldn't wait on Waynesboro, so we had to do something over there, too.
We called on the carpet by the city council.
Yeah, that's right. City council and so on, and what are you going to do? So anyway, what we did, what I did is get the word out through the cable TV people, the NACTV they call it, that I was looking for a partner, a capital partner, that is. And in getting that capital partner, it was very easy. I just sent an announcement out to the first one that has this check on my desk on Monday morning. They'll be the partner. And a lot of people had to negotiate, but evidently one did not have to, and there was a this check for the first check of $1 million is on my desk on Monday morning, within 5 days. And it was American Finance Systems. They had small loan operations all over the United States, I guess. And so that let us finish Charlottesville and finish Waynesboro. And my understanding was when we opened it that we were the second 12-channel cable system in the United States.
That's it. Right here in Charlottesville. Bob Monroe, the founder of Jefferson Cable Corporation, which brought local television here to Charlottesville in the years before NBC 29. We're going to continue our discussion of early television in Charlottesville with Steve Ashby after this break for local news and weather. You're listening to Charlottesville Right Now.
You're listening to WINA's Charlottesville Right Now, thanks to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. If you want to get involved with the show, feel free to comment on our blog at SevillePodcast.com.
We're talking with Steve Ashby about the beginnings of local television in Charlottesville. Jefferson Cable Corporation opened in the early 60s and brought local TV to Charlottesville. And of course, we were talking during the break, this really predates NBC 29. When did that open?
I believe it was in early 1973, Coy. Harold Wright started it. He still owns the station. And I really didn't know any of the 29 people. I just remember there was some interaction between their engineers and Larry Ritchie, who was the engineer for Jefferson Cable, because they had to displace Channel 4 in Washington to put Channel 29 on the cable. And that's why if you're a cable subscriber today, Channel 29 comes in on Channel 4.
There you go. Because it was replacing Channel 4 out
right,
of Washington.
Exactly. Yeah, Channel 4 was the NBC affiliate. And, of course, they needed a local signal because that's what they were required to do. They had Channel 12, too, but that was already up at Channel 12. They didn't need to get rid of that.
So, and of course, but the Jefferson Cable Corporation, all the guys you worked that were doing this local cable television, you were doing local news,
yeah.
Local TV news,
right.
Before there was NBC 29.
Yeah, that's right. They bought a news van, and Denny Bly has a real funny story about that, which I hope we'll have time to play. They used to go out and chase ambulances and fire trucks, and they hired Ray Berry termed them the Mikes, Mike Gleason and Mike Lantrip, and Richie Haney, who used to run WINA. Also worked in the news department at Jefferson Cable. And they put on a little 15-minute news show that was sponsored by People's Drugstore at Barracks Road. And the advertisement was a slide of CVS and someone talking in the background, probably Mike Gleason. And if you are familiar with the Bernard Chamberlain community history shows, Mike Gleason co-hosted the show from probably when it started in the early 70s till about 74, 75 when he went off to run the Bicentennial Commission for Charlottesville. And he lives over somewhere on the Northern Neck, I believe, now, and still writes a little history. You can find him on the internet.
Yeah. Tell us about some of the other local shows that were produced by Jefferson Cable Corporation.
All right. Well, there were a lot of fun ones I worked on. Classroom Capers was produced as a children's show for kids who were in school by two Greenbrier teachers, Punky Fail, who's a real estate agent now, and Cookie, and I'm sorry, Cookie, I can't remember your last name. They were very good. They had a fun time. The theme song was the theme from Hair, and the camera would do all kinds of wild motions, and the kids would jump up and down and scream, and it was a great opening. It was a fun show. The kids enjoyed doing it. A lot of kids were involved in doing it, so it was a great way to get kids involved in television.
Yeah.
And there's still probably four or five of the videotapes in the collection at the Ivy Stacks at UVA. So these could probably be salvaged at some point if someone wants to transfer them.
Now, speaking of other local shows, let's hear from the Jefferson Cable Corporation, the main announcer, which was Bill Olson. Is that right?
Bill was one of the announcers. He worked for the Radio TV Center at UVA, and he was a UVA professor. He was a Marxist historian from Moscow, Idaho, and and when I was at UVA, I took a class from Bill, He was a funny guy. This was back, of course, in 1970, 71, and we had a bomb threat in one of the classes one time, and it was raining like crazy, and Bill was bald-headed, and we were forced to evacuate Cabell Hall, New Cabell Hall, and go to Newcomb Hall to finish our class. And Bill was complaining the whole way. He said, I know this is just some kid trying to get out of an exam. If it was for a real cause, I wouldn't mind. It was very funny.
Here is the Bill Olson promoting Premier Theater, which we'll talk about when we get back, on Cable Channel 11 in 1970.
George Montgomery portrays Philip Marlowe, the classic Raymond Chandler detective, in The Brasher Doubloon, an exciting mystery movie tomorrow night at 8:30 on Premier Theater. The Brasher Doubloon is just one of three fine motion pictures presented without commercial interruptions for your viewing enjoyment on WJCC-TV, Channel 11, a public service of the Jefferson Cable Corporation in Charlottesville, Virginia.
There you go, 1970. Yeah. And that channels 10 and 11 were the locally produced shows, right?
Yeah, 10 was called Community Channel 10 or Community Cable 10 or sometimes just Cablevision 10, depending on the announcer. Unfortunately, all the Cable 10 announcements, the raw tape has been lost. There are probably plenty of them on the tapes up at UVA, so I couldn't transcribe those. But I managed to salvage the reel-to-reel tape with Bill's announcements on them.
And Channel 11?
Yeah, Channel 11, they mostly ran movies. Bob Monroe had worked for either Republic Pictures or Monogram Pictures back in the 30s, and he knew some people in Los Angeles, and he got a deal to show all these old things, early John Wayne Westerns, Flash Gordon serials. They ran everything that Republic Pictures ever made, I think. They were all B films for the most part. And occasional A film, but mostly B pictures.
We're talking with Steve Ashby, who worked for Jefferson Cable Corporation, the first locally produced television group here in Charlottesville, predated NBC 29 by about 10 years. And if you remember Jefferson Cable, give us a call. Did you have a favorite show? Did you watch? Give us a call, 977-1070. We'd love to hear from you. Steve, let's play a clip from the 1970 Christmas show on Jefferson Cable. And we'll have you tell us what it was after we hear it. 1970.
Mrs. Mia Dom, Program Director.
Now, here is that simple holiday recipe I promised you for candy. It's a recipe that involves only a very few ingredients, and they tell us to use is to melt the semi-sweet morsels in a double broiler. Well, we don't have a portable electric double broiler, so I'm going to just have to improvise here.
There you go. Great stuff. That is fantastic. Who was that and where was that?
Okay, that was done at Cable Studios. It was the December 1970 Christmas program, and they pretty much just went through the studio with the camera, with a huge long cable, and videotaped anyone that worked there. And Mia had an electric, it was a hot plate basically, and she was she was attempting to make a cookie recipe. I don't think things went as well as she planned, but there wasn't much we could do about it. But she was the first program director at Jefferson Cable, and when I was a senior in high school, she was the person I talked to about getting on Speakout. She got us all relaxed and stuck us in front of the black and white cameras, and she actually manned one of them, or womaned one of them.
Yeah, good stuff. There was also a show called Cable Contact, right?
Stacy Jackson. A lot of you may remember her. I believe she was an educator, and she used to have various people in the community on and talk to them. I used to work camera on that. And later on in my postal career, I delivered her mail when she lived out in West Lee after she remarried.
There you go. We're talking with Steve Ashby about Jefferson Cable Corporation, and George Simpson is on line one. George, you used to work at Jefferson Cable, is that right?
Yes, I was working at WELK Radio at the time that the FCC enforced the ruling that cable companies with, I believe, 12,000 or more subscribers had to go into local programming. And Mr. Monroe, who I knew, contacted me about coming up to Jefferson Cable to be the sales manager for the local television at the time. And he talked me into it. And later he was looking for a general manager, and a guy that I worked in radio with over in Harrisonburg, I talked him into coming over here, Joe Price, who managed the cable system, managed the programming. And then later, when the FCC changed the ruling, he stayed on as manager of the cable system and later ended up being vice president of the corporation.
George, tell me what it was like when you went to local businesses to get them to support this brand-new local television.
It actually wasn't that difficult. It was a lot easier than what I thought it was going to be. And I'll tell you one strange instance that we had. Joe Price and I were both NASCAR fans and still are, and we decided if we could carry the radio broadcast on the audio side, that we could carry slides for the video side. So I contacted NASCAR in Charlotte and asked them to send us all the slides they could have that they had of drivers, accidents, race scenes, and they sent us just hundreds and hundreds. So we broadcasted the race and showed slides and
that's great.
Sold it. As strange as it may seem, we had a lot of people who were NASCAR fans, and they decided, well, it would be a good buy for their advertising, and it worked real well.
That's terrific. That's great. And, of course, Steve, you remember George.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Hey, George.
Hey, how you doing, Steve?
All right, haven't seen you in a long time.
I know. It's been a while. I just got an email from Joe the other day. Said that he had heard from Denny, and Denny wants to have a reunion.
Yeah. We were talking about it. Denny and I were talking about it the other day. That's great.
Yeah, that's great. George, thank you for calling. Appreciate
okay.
it. Absolutely, and thanks for listening. There's George Simpson, who was a sales manager at Jefferson Cable Corporation back in the day. And, of course, Steve, Jefferson Cable didn't disappear. It was...
It was bought by
Adelphia first?
Well,
or?
No. There was a newspaper company, Manchester Media, I believe is the name of it, that bought it in 1975. Bob grew less and less interested in television as he got into his consciousness studies, and he decided to found the Monroe Institute in Nelson County. He'd been working out of a garage, I think, up in Greene County before then, doing his little hemisync studies. And So he was pretty much tired of being Zanny Whoop in his office taking interstellar cruises, and so he went on his way, and the people that took over decided they needed to make more money, and gradually, multi-channel bought it from them, and gradually they just sort of did away with production up until your day when you started your show in 1991 or so.
Yeah. So, and that was and it became what y'all did became what we would now call today public access television.
Yeah.
It was
called local origination.
Yeah.
It was required by the FCC. They had to start doing it by April 1st, 1971, Bob decided that he wanted to do it earlier because he just enjoyed that. A lot of these guys came out of radio. Joe Price, as George mentioned, was a radio announcer. I think he started in Charlotte, North Carolina. And if you want to play that clip of Joe doing the Shenandoah Shenanigans,
I don't think we have time for that one.
Okay.
But I do have time. I want to go out and let folks hear Bernard Chamberlain.
Oh,
in Court Square, and tell us what his show was, because that was real popular,
wasn't
it?
His show was called Community History, and he did it in the studio, but we also went out and did some field work. Bernard was, he was always himself. I'd be working all three cameras, and Denny would be switching in the control room, and Bernard would have a coughing fit, sending the sound, off the scale, and Denny would say over the intercom, "Steve, I think he's gone. We may have to call an ambulance."
Goodness. And of course, he was a local attorney.
Yes,
and
that's
a local
right.
historian as well.
Yeah.
And hosted this show on Channel 10.
Yeah, Channel 10.
Called
yeah.
Community
yeah.
History. And yeah. as we go out, We'll hear a little bit of Bernard Chamberlain, which is a priceless, priceless voice.
Yeah, this was from the Mall Overview tape, I believe.
Yeah, yeah. So. And Steve, thank you for being here, and let's get you back. Okay. I mean, there's so much more we could talk about, and we'll have you back again. Yeah,
my pleasure.
Steve Ashby with the Jefferson Cable Corporation back in the day, which brought local television to Charlottesville. And as we go out, we will hear Bernard Chamberlain, host of Community History on Cable Channel 10, from when is this from?
I believe he recorded that in early 1975 for the Mall tape.
There you go. So. Okay, we'll hear that as we go. Steve, thanks so much.
The history of Charlottesville started pretty much right where I'm standing. I'm standing at the moment in front of the Albemarle County Historical Society building, museum here, which was the law office of a great many distinguished lawyers of the bar. I'm looking across the way at the courthouse, and over there to the right of the courthouse is a little plaque on the wall, rather not a plaque, but a display stand, and in that is a drawing of Charlottesville with the buildings on it and the streets as it existed about 1828. We come back to the origination of Charlottesville. Of course, we have to go back a little further than that to the origination of Albemarle County, which was established out of Goochland in 1744, created then, established by ceremony down at Scott's Ferry in February of 1745. In 1761, the various counties on the other side of the James River and the other side of the Rockfish River were taken out from Albemarle County and were made counties of their own. We had to move the county seat to a new site near the center. And this site here, between the Southwest Mountains and Blue Ridge Mountains on this hill where we are right now in Court Square, was chosen as a good site. It was just virgin territory at that time. It was a Taylor patent at the moment, and it was chosen, and a town was laid out for it. And that was in 1762 that this town here was established as the county seat of Albemarle County. This is the old area of it around Court Square right now. We had a red fort, but it's a terribly interesting city, and we hope to keep it, this area around the Court Square, through the protection of the architectural design control ordinance. We hope to keep it looking more or less like it is for time immemorially in the future. There's always a danger of a city developing too fast and too many people and becoming too modern and falling a victim to what they call progress and then becoming like any other city. We hope to keep Charlottesville unique.
And what a time it was, it was. A time of innocence, a time of confidences. Long ago it must be, I have a photograph. Preserve your memories, they're all that's left you.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more. You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Poi Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.